This is Akashvani. In the weekly program Current Affairs, now we bring you a discussion on effective disaster management in India. The participants are Krishna S. Vats, member, National Disaster Management Authority, Mukul Sanwal, senior environmentalist, and Prakash Das, Bhubaneswar correspondent, Akashvani News. The moderator is Anubha Rohatgi.
Natural calamities in many parts of the country over the last few weeks have created havoc and resulted in the loss of innumerable lives and damage to ecology. To discuss various aspects of these events, including their causes, consequences, safety measures, and the role of disaster management agencies, I am now joined by Mr. Krishna S. Vats, member, National Disaster Management Authority, environmentalist Mr. Mukul Sanwal, and Mr. Prakash Das, Bhubaneswar correspondent, Akashvani News. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Sanwal, I will begin with you. Over the last couple of years, there has been a rise in natural disasters across the world. And in India, we have seen such havoc in many parts of the country, including Kerala, Uttarakhand and Himachal Pradesh in the last few weeks. Hundreds of lives have been lost and environment and infrastructure has been damaged. What are some of the factors that are responsible for such events?
See, basically, you would have noticed that in the newspapers or other comments, there is no stress on climate change because we know climate change is not on us. What is actually happening is climate variability, so that the frequency and extreme weather events is increasing. And let me give you the example. What happened in Wayanad? Wayanad, more rainfall took place in a week or in a couple of days rather than takes place in the entire month. In 2023, the same thing happened in Himachal. 400 lives lost there itself. So you have what we can call cloudburst, colloquially, but the western disturbance, monsoons clashing with each other in Himachal, and more of a cloudburst situation in Wayanad. That's one. Two, there are peculiar factors in each of these areas which need to be considered. For example, in the Bhagirathi Valley, Chamoli, I think we're all aware of what happened there. The dams were washed off, large-scale loss of life and property. That is where the tectonic plate, that is the Deccan plate and the Eurasian plate meet. So if you look at the geography or the river valleys of the Bhagirathi Valley, the Garhwal side, not the Kumaon side, you will see that the Ganga and its tributaries meander around. They don't flow straight down. It is a peculiar geological situation. In Himachal, we had the Shivaliks, which are the youngest mountain range in the world and unstable. So you have this cloudburst phenomena where either the monsoon or some freak event takes place and more rainfall pours down in a few days than what happens in a whole month or more. And these geological phenomena. And of course, the third thing is that we have occupied the river valley or floodplains. You see this in Delhi. When the river level rises, people move out, come onto the roadside and then go back. The floodplain was not meant for habitation. Now we have habited them. But I think Wayanad, another important issue in Wayanad is that when you look at the photographs of Wayanad, you don't see large-scale destruction of the environment. It is still heavily wooded. There are still trees floating down the rivers, silt and trees. So you can see that generalizations don't work. There are location-specific factors. We don't know where it will come next. We do know that in the Bhagirathi Valley is unstable. We know parts of Himachal are unstable, but we did not know that Wayanad is unstable. So the key issue is, how do we respond?
You're talking about a response, Mr. Sanwal. So I would like to bring in Mr. Vats here. Various agencies in the country, such as the IMD and even the NDMA, give timely warnings and alerts to prepare people and the administration for such incidents. We see evacuations happening. We see people being moved to safer places. Now, what else can be done at an individual level to stay safe?
The community level and the household levels, we can definitely monitor the situations more closely and take the precautions. And some of the precautions are very essential. I would give the reference to the events of electrocution. Now, that's a very distinct possibility in a situation of floods. So when a particular part of the city or area is inundated and there is a collapse of electricity poles, we need to take enough care to avoid these electric poles, electric wires, and keep ourselves safe. The other basic precautions that we need to take is that the flowing water could be very treacherous. So we need not step into the water at all. Many people just fall in manholes. Many people don't have the idea of the depth of water, and or they get pulled by strong currents. So I think the stepping into water and not knowing the terrain is one of the most frequent causes of deaths in the flood. So these are some of the precautions that we need to take at the individual level. And this could be said about other hazards as well. Say, for example, lightning. A lot of people die in the open fields when they are actually engaged in agricultural operations. And I think there is a need for more awareness and more alert to save oneself from such situations.
Mr. Watts, I would also like to draw your attention to the fact that a lot of times we have seen and we have read in the newspaper articles also, like I was saying, that various agencies do issue alerts. They do give you warnings that the river level is going to rise. Please vacate this where you are living, especially those living near the rivers. So a lot of times we have seen that people ignore such warnings. They think that we have time, we can do it later on. And that also leads to disasters and losses a lot of time.
There are several reasons why the people are reluctant. Sometimes the warnings pan out as they expect it to be. Say the flooding, the inundation is not at the same level as it was the forecast, and people could become complacent that the warnings would be off the mark. Sometimes they are worried about the safety and security. Sometimes they don't have an alternative place to go. So these are some of the immediate causes why people don't always follow. But there is also a culture of prevention. And I think in coastal areas, people tend to evacuate much faster because they have been evacuating for quite some time. And the government also works very closely with the communities so that the people leave the dangerous areas or the areas where the cyclone is likely to make landfall. And this is the reason why our mortality in cyclones is going down. And we need to spread this culture of prevention among the people, at least in the case of floods, so that people are able to heed the warnings much better.
Mr. Watts, in the unfortunate event of being caught in a disaster, whom should one contact for help and relief?
So there is a 112 line. We are trying to see that the 112 line is operational for disaster response across the country. So if there is any such situation, people should call 112 and ask for help.
Prakash, Mr. Watts was just now talking about cyclones, and Odisha unfortunately has had to bear the brunt of cyclones year after year. What steps does the administration take to alert and prepare those at risk? And how has the state's preparedness and management capabilities improved over the years?
Yanuwa, it has been almost 25 years since the super cyclone ravaged Odisha in 1999. Around 18 million people were affected. More than 10,000 precious lives were lost and the economy was devastated. The event, however, marked a turning point in Odisha's development trajectory. Not only did the cyclone-prone state resolve to protect it from the future disasters, setting up goal of zero human casualties, it also emerged as a global pioneer in disaster management. In fact, Odisha has learned from its own experiences. As the climate risks multiply, Odisha is raising its own bar for cyclone risk mitigation and exploring more sophisticated technologies while ensuring they are accessible to and owned by the local communities as far as possible. As Odisha's experience shows, it is important for every state to recognize that disaster preparedness and management is a developmental priority to be pursued in accordance with every state's own socio-cultural context, but in all cases with a sense of urgency. It is not a matter of choice anymore, for climate change is a clear and present danger, and millions of lives and livelihoods are at stake. Today, Odisha is more resilient. Odisha's years of planning and preparedness paid off as fatalities from powerful cyclones never crossed double digits. When Cyclone Phailin struck the coastal in 2013, Odisha carried out one of the most successful disaster management efforts in the world, evacuating close to 1 million people ahead of the strongest cyclone to hit the country since the super cyclone in 1999. In 2019, when another powerful cyclone, Fani, struck, the Odisha government showed a high degree of preparedness and effectively evacuated about 1.2 million people based on these predictions. And now in 1999, in the wake of super cyclone, Odisha became the first state in India to establish a disaster management authority. Importantly, the state departed from the conventional approach to disaster management by placing local communities at the heart of the efforts. As such, people at the grassroots, Gram Panchayat, women self-help groups, and a 1 lakh plus cadre of volunteers were trained to reduce disaster risk and manage rescue and relief operations.
Mr. Sanwal, as Prakash was just telling us about the Odisha-specific disaster management authority, how significant is the role of such agencies, be it National Disaster Management Authority, be it the SDMAs, be it the NDRFs? How important is the role of such agencies in relief and rescue operations?
As society becomes more complex and we urbanize even the rural areas, we cannot do without the NDRF and the central government's scientific backup. Because, you see, the meteorological predictions are part of the central government's remit. They are improving constantly. The link has to be established between those predictions and the ground level. The district collectors or the state governments can focus on community involvement, volunteers, and the kind of response Prakash Ji was just telling us about. But we must keep one thing in mind. The level of the Jamuna in Delhi rises almost every year. And you can predict it because the flow of water upstream tells you by on which date what is likely to be the water level. Similarly, cyclones, you can actually see them on the radar. You know that they are going to landfall will be at a particular time, a particular place, with a particular intensity, give or take a little bit, so last minute shifts. But you can predict it. What happened in Wayanad, or say in the Bhagirathi or in Himachal, you cannot predict. It is totally unexpected. And look at the scale in Wayanad. 10,000 people are still in camps 10 days later. So the question is that we have to learn from the experience of Odisha particularly, because yes, they have perfected it in a way. They are up to international standards where there is loss of property. You cannot help it, but there is almost no loss of life. That is basically a very high level of international standard one can talk about. Now we have to see the positive part that has worked there and bring it on to the other areas so that even in an unexpected event like in Wayanad, there is some kind of response availability. The disaster management plans provide for more community involvement. The most important issue there is infrastructure, departmental coordination, not the community involvement. And once we take that element from Odisha, and one can see elements of volunteers in Wayanad. I read in the newspapers that the district collector has asked ham radio people for communication. Now, that is an example of going to the community which has this particular resource. So maybe things of that kind we need to list out and say how we can spread these around in the more vulnerable areas. We cannot predict what will happen, but at least we can establish some kind of infrastructure of this kind.
I just wanted to say like how Odisha has managed that. Odisha State Disaster Management Authority has built over 800 multipurpose cyclone shelters together with evacuation of roads along with the state's entire coastline. Embankments are also being built to protect seaside villages from the ingress of the sea, and several vulnerable families have been helped to shift from straw huts to new multi-hazard disaster resilient houses. Most importantly, Odisha is the first Indian state to have created an early warning system for disseminating critical disaster-related information to the very last mile. Nearly 1,200 villages in all the coastal districts of the state now receive cyclone or tsunami warnings through sirens and mass messaging, and also through All India Radio. This early warning system with watchtowers in over 120 coastal locations forms the bedrock of Odisha's disaster preparedness and response.
Mr. Vats, as Prakash just now told us, you know, the steps that the administration has taken, that the government has taken. So at the central level as well, we have act called the Disaster Management Act of 2005. Now, earlier this month, the government has brought in an amendment to this particular bill. And among other things, it aims to create a centralized database and empower expert bodies to better anticipate and respond to such disasters. What I want to ask you, Mr. Vats, is specifically because one of the proposed changes in the new bill is empowering the NDMA and the SDMAs to prepare disaster management plans, something which was being earlier handled by the executive committees at the national and the state levels. How significant is this particular provision which the new act is seeking?
The 2005 act the responsibility for preparation of the national and state level disaster management plans were assigned to the National Executive Committee and the State Executive Committee. Practically, these are the committees. These are not the permanent bodies, and it was very difficult for them to prepare the plans. And that is why the decision has been taken that instead of these executive committees, we should have these plans prepared through the NDMA and SDMA, which are a specialist body. So the decision has been taken based on the experience of the processes that are involved in the preparation of the plan.
Mr. Sanwal, would you like to add something to this about the significance? How significant, how important is this step to bring in NDMA and SDMAs for planning?
I think the important issue here is, as Mr. Vats has just said, that you give a more important role to science. Executive committees basically mean departmental heads and others who are sitting together and preparing within the traditional sense. As the scientific input increases, now why not it is all science? In Orissa, we have sorted out the science because it is frequent and we are keeping watch on the science. In Himachal, again, it is still science input is required. I think one issue is that in a larger body of this kind, the scientist has a greater role, which I think is very, very valid. The second issue, I think, is that it adds more authority to whatever comes out so that others tend to accept it. It has more been deliberated more intensely, and it has certain authority under the Act, which provides for enforcement of these plans.
Prakash, I want to ask you, because we are discussing, you know, the provisions of this very important act. And like I was just saying that now NDMA and SDMAs have been brought in to prepare disaster management plans, which were earlier being prepared by executive committee. And from what you've been telling us about Odisha, do you think that bringing in specially SDMAs, state level disaster management agency, it's a much better thing because local administration knows the issues well. And, you know, they're much more familiar with how things happen and they can make specific plans.
Certainly, there is a need to work together, both the national level and also at the state level, because in the last two decades of persistence in building both resilient infrastructure and resilient communities have stood the state in good stead. There is, however, more to be done. Disaster risk management is a dynamic process, requiring us to be ever alert to new needs and challenges, because every disaster is different. There are no textbook solutions, as you know. Yet, as a coastal state, Odisha, we know that in the coming years, Odisha will have to brace for more frequent and intense cyclones, heat waves, droughts, extreme rainfall events, cloudbursts, floods, flash floods, and lightning storms, tsunami, and sea level rise. So there is also an urgent need to protect Odisha's 482 kilometer long coastline from the sea erosion. So I believe that, yeah, both at the national level and state level, they should work together. And if there is an uniformity, then that will help.
Mr. Vats, let's take another provision of this particular act, which is that it gives NDMA the mandate to regularly assess the wide spectrum of disaster risks facing the nation, including those that can arise from extreme climate events and other factors, even if such disasters have not happened yet. Now, the way weather patterns are being affected by climate change and in consequence leading to devastating disasters, this provision becomes very crucial to prepare for the future.
Climate change, we are seeing the rise of atmospheric hazards. We are seeing the spread of heat wave. The intensity and the spell of the heat wave has been increasing across the country. And this is something that an organization like NDMA has to take cognizance of. The same thing could be said about few other hazards such as urban floods, forest fires, lightning. These are the hazards which were not so much acknowledged earlier. These are the emerging hazards which are spreading fast thanks to the impacts of the climate change. So NDMA definitely needs to take stock of the emerging patterns of disaster and plan appropriate mitigation measures, alert the states about planning suitable responses. So this is a very, very important insertion that actually enables NDMA to address some of these disasters more forthrightly. I would also like to speak about a few other things that have been introduced through the Act. One, of course, is the setting up of urban disaster management authorities. We had state disaster management authorities and the district disaster management authorities. And as the cities are growing, the district disaster management authorities could not address particular needs of the cities, which arose out of the complexity of the governance, the interconnectedness of various kinds of risks and vulnerabilities, and overlapping jurisdictions. So with a view to resolve some of the issues and vest more powers in the municipal governments, the government has decided to bring an amendment and set up the Urban Disaster Management Authority at the city level. So that's a very, very important amendment. The other important amendment is that all the states have been asked to set up a state disaster response force. As mentioned by my fellow panelists, the response needs to be more precise, more local, and more hazard specific, and it's very, very important that we have local level responders. So to augment the strength of the local level responders, it has been decided to set up the state disaster response force so that we can organize response more proactively and more promptly. So these are two very, very important amendments. In addition, the functions of the SDMA, NDMA and DDMAs, they have been rationalized based on the experience of the last 20 years. And also there have been certain provisions introduced to improve the compliance of some of the instructions and directives which are interstate in nature, so that there is no confusion and the compliance is more smooth.
Mr. Sanwal, environmental experts and activists have been pointing out that activities such as mining, deforestation and indiscriminate construction without consideration for damage to the ecology are some of the major reasons for the rise in these calamities. Now, what needs to be done at the policy-making level to ensure that economic progress does not come at the cost of the environment when we talk about especially long-term planning?
The issue has comes up every time. For some reason, it has not come at Wayanad because I don't think the problem was noticeable there except for the river valleys. And that were inundated by the silts that came down, the steep slope, the trees you can see on the photographs. The issue of environment versus development, I think, is location specific in some senses. It comes up in the Char Dham area, Joshimath, regularly. And it will continue to come because Joshimath itself is an unstable location. And if you look at the old historical records, Joshimath itself had a stream running through it. There were gharats, there were water mills, which meant it was inherently unstable. So we have a problem there. Similarly, we know that there are certain locations in the entire Himalayan belt where you have landslides every year because of geological issues. Water seeps down, the shale or clay soil slides down. Now, the other day I came across a news item which I think is very, very important. Mr. Gadkari is saying that I will go for viaducts. Now, viaduct is what China has been doing for a very long time. That is, you don't cut the hillside. If there is a rock foundation, you take the road outside the mountain areas, just as you have done for the Chenab Railway Bridge. You have constructed a bridge in a location which was not a traditional bridge because it was a strong base. You take it on pillars or columns and you don't disturb the hillside. I think that is the kind of approach which should have been there earlier. And it is very interesting that the minister has to point this out and not a scientific body, because the Himalayas we know are moving. In that particular area, we know they are moving and we have technical solutions for that.
What has happened in different parts of the country lately? And like at the beginning of the discussion, I was saying that, you know, we've had such disasters happening over the last couple of years around the world. Such disasters are a reminder that the adverse effects of climate change are not a distant future threat, but they are a current reality. My question is to both you, Mr. Watts, and Mr. Sanwal, what needs to be done to reduce the impact of such events on people in the future? Mr. Sanwal, let's have you first.
The solution is the Orissa solution, infrastructure. Mr. Das and Mr. Watts both pointed out the extensive nature of infrastructure there, both for response as well as for saving the human population. Now, the problem here is that where it is predictable, you can build these infrastructures, and we will have to for settled populations. I'm deliberately using the word settled because in the Jamuna floodplain, these people go out and come back again. They're not a settled population. But for settled populations, we will have to do this. And we are doing this early warning, very precise early warning. In fact, the Orissa solution will have to be spread out throughout the country in a sense. Then comes the second question comes is that we need to have better predictable predictions from the meteorological department, and they are improving this. They have the Doppler radar, which they need to deploy more frequently. What we are not looking at, because we have not had that calamity or that emergency, is the heat. We had that in Delhi, some areas of North India, the heat island effect, which is technically called the heat island effect. The cities, the temperatures rise 5 or 6 degrees more than normal temperatures because of the concrete pavement, the roads, the reflection of the buildings. And that had created problems. That is going to create further problems down the line. Now, that is more to do with care and other things, because you cannot redesign a city. You need to, again, warn people to dehydrate themselves, etc. So I think while we are moving quite fast on the waterfront, the extreme rainfall events, the temperature events we are not looking at, we need to look at those also, particularly in cities. And that is why the city level plans are very important, because A, the water comes from somewhere else. They need to be aware of it. You had this problem in Delhi and interstate, which the amendment has provided for, but also the heat effect, how to sensitize people. Traditionally, we have had this.
Mr. Watts, what will you say? Because like I was saying, that climate change is not something that's going to affect us in near future or even distant future. It's happening now. So with that in mind, what can be done to reduce impact of these disasters on people in future?
It has to be a multi-pronged effort. One, that we have the climate extremes, and to deal with those extreme events, we need to improve our early warning further, and we need to provide more precise early warning and early warning for various kinds of disasters, even remoter locations. We need to improve response, and we need to be able to respond at the local level. And further, we need to be investing consistently in disaster mitigation, preparedness as well as mitigation. So that we need to strengthen the whole disaster management cycle is undoubtedly the most important imperative. But at the other level, we also need to improve our adaptation. That we need to improve our urban planning. We need to have more vegetation. We need to invest more in water conservation. We need to invest more in reviving and improving our water bodies and wetlands. And we also need to be more energy efficient. So we need to address the priorities at both the levels.
And would you also say that, you know, the factors which are leading to climate change, such as deforestation, quarrying, unchecked construction, these are something, you know, the yes. policies, the laws that oversee these aspects, they have to be, you know, very strictly enforced.
So this is again very, very important. As I mentioned, natural resources need to be conserved because they actually act as our carbon sink. But at the same time, reducing the greenhouse gases is equally important. That we need to reduce the pollution. We need to reduce the emission of gases, and we need to bring down the temperature through various measures. So when, for example, you know, when we are building a house, we need to provide for more thermal comfort. So these are some of the important steps that need to be taken across the sector. Say, for example, if we are engaged in agriculture, we need to promote agriculture that is less water intensive. So conserving water resources, improving our lifestyle in terms of energy efficiency, caring more for conservation of natural resources, these are some of the most important measures that we need to undertake for dealing with climate change impacts on a long-term basis.
Mr. Mukul Sanwal, Mr. Krishna S.
Yes.
Watts, and Prakash Das, thank you so much for joining us in this discussion.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on effective disaster management in India. The participants were Krishna S. Watts, member, National Disaster Management Authority; Mukul Sanwal, senior environmentalist; and Prakash Das, Bhuvaneshwar correspondent, Akashvani News. The moderator was Anubha Rohtgi. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.